and welcome to CanQueer, home of Canada's queer media. My name is Luke Smith.
Jake Nguyen.
Now, I just off the bat, I'm not sure when you introduced the show a couple of weeks, whether or not you were copying me or what's-his-face from Magic Mike with hello, 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 or however you did it.
I mean, to be fair, is it me imitating you, or is it you, or is it me imitating you imitating the other guy?
Now, we actually have an interview lined up today. I had a great opportunity to interview the mastermind behind In Rainbows, a LGBT radio program out of CFUV-FM, based at the University of Victoria on Vancouver Island. Kerry Sage was a fantastic interview. We'll get to that just after some good international news. There is some not-so-good international news. We might get to it, hopefully not. I don't like talking about bad news, but we'll talk about some good news. They found a blood test that can identify whether or not drugs targeted against prostate cancer are effective. So this blood test actually identifies whether or not the drug is having any effect on the prostate cancer. So up until now, it's kind of you take the drug and hope for the best. Now they can actually see if it works. If it doesn't work, try something else.
So this blood test, does it track like the progress of the prostate cancer, or does it just detect the, I don't know, I'm not very informed with the prostate cancer treatment. So can you track its progress by taking this blood test, or do you have to like actually go to a doctor, take all this, I don't know, some kind of whatever test that they do for prostate cancer every month or so? Mm-hmm. Like, is it just making it simpler, or is this like the first one?
Well, they tested 49 men, and what it does is it looks for, it reacts to prostate cancer's concentrations in DNA.
Okay.
Or in the DNA of the cells. And what it does, it doesn't tell you whether or not you have prostate cancer, but rather this test says whether or not the drugs against it are effective. So if they are effective, this is good news. If they're not effective, then maybe the cancer cells have evolved. Maybe they've become resistant to that drug. Maybe that drug just doesn't affect those cancer cells at all. And then you can identify new strategies. Mm-hmm. But whereas before, that kind of next level of attention wasn't there. So this is good news. It's coming out of the Institute for Cancer Research and the Royal Marsden NHS Foundation Trust. So, yeah, great research and great news out of
I really UK. Hope that they get it out as quick as possible. I mean, prostate cancer is a big problem. Mm. I know, at least in my family, like not my intermediate family, but more like my overall, I have a big family. At least 3 people in my family has prostate cancer. So, you know, genetically, I have a risk of having prostate cancer.
For sure. Well, get tested. It's just all it takes is a single digit.
How do you test for prostate cancer? Like, how do you? I actually never thought about it. Like, how do you know you have prostate cancer when you're just at home? Touching your balls.
That's not prostate cancers.
I was making it. Okay.
That's how you identify if you do find any unusual lumps or bumps on your testicles, please do get checked. It may be nothing. It may be testicular cancer. Very important to go get checked. Take your health seriously. And actually, we did a show with it. We interviewed somebody from the Canadian Cancer Society, and gay men are a higher risk of prostate and testicular cancer. As well as some other cancers due to increased rates of smoking and occasionally the drug use as well. So if you believe that you are at risk, please go and get checked. Which actually brings me to an interesting point, and it wasn't on my good news story, but it was an interesting news story where it's like gay men and just the queer community tends to forget that there's other health concerns. That it's not just HIV. I mean, take HIV very seriously, of course. Mm. But there is a hepatitis C outbreak at World Pride in Spain.
Let me guess. Is it because of the overuse of PrEP? I have heard a lot about PrEP, and personally, I feel it's a great drug. It doesn't eliminate the risk of HIV infection, but it does effectively lower it significantly, but at the same time, it doesn't protect you against anything else.
Yeah. So it's actually hepatitis A, which is, you know, hepatitis A is an infection or virus.
It's spread fast. Let's just say that.
But it got to a point that the British Health Service issued an official warning to anyone going there. So if you do plan on visiting World Pride in Madrid, be aware. Hepatitis A, of course, is spread through food or water that is contaminated with feces. And there's been an outbreak amongst men that have sex with men that is believed to have been spread through oral or anal sex. So be careful. PrEP doesn't prevent everything, such as hepatitis A. Take your health seriously, essentially.
I mean, to be fair, nothing prevents anything, like, 100%. Because if you think about it, sexual transmitted disease and infections, there are loads of them, and no drugs is a universal drug sexual health protector. Like, you can't wear a condom and expect not to get, herpes. Hmm. It lowers the
crabs.
Risk. Oh, crabs. But hey, I'm a regular gay man, but I know to take care of myself, and I have not had crabs or herpes, even though I can't tell the difference, so, you know, that's a good sign.
The trick is to get checked regularly.
And to use condoms.
And other things. So I wanted to touch on another bit of good news, and that is that in a country where, according to a poll, 78% of people believe that homosexuality should not be expressed outside the home, and 65% believe that it's an illness. That country, Serbia, has just elected, or she kind of passed on to the role, has been appointed, Ana Brnabic, I may be mispronouncing her name, I'm not fluent in Serbian, but has just been appointed as the new Prime Minister of Serbia, and she's openly lesbian. So she's now one of less than half a dozen.
So she wasn't voted in, is what you're saying? Because if you think about it, when you have a census among the population, you usually reach about 60 to 80% of that population at best. So to say that over, let's say 40% of them don't think that homosexuality should be expressed outside the home, that also means that about 40% of that certain population probably not going to vote for, you know...
Well, so the way it worked in Serbia is the president, Aleksandar Vučić, announced on Thursday he was the prime minister. He's now becoming the president. So he chose his successor, which is Ana Brnabic, who is 41, to succeed him. She is the first woman and the first gay person to hold the role, which is pretty incredible.
That is actually pretty epic, because being the first woman is one thing, but being the first woman and being the first LGBTQ member to actually hold that position in Serbia, that is a big deal. But at the same time, it's like, I wonder if she's gonna succeed later on as a prime minister as well, because...
Well, no, she is prime minister.
Not prime minister, president. Mm. Like, if she succeeds as president, what does it say about the political system in Serbia, or how their political system is represented by, is it their population, or is it whoever's succeed that role? So, I mean, I would love to see Serbia being more progressive and all that sort. But if you think about it, if the general population saying that they don't see homosexuality should be expressed outside the home, maybe that political system is not representing its people not so well. Well, yeah.
There is a theory that the president has just put her in as a smokescreen to make it look like they're doing good on LGBT rights. But the prime minister generally has more power in Serbia than the president, so who knows what good work she'll be able to do to move the country forward. She is, of course, joined by Luxembourg and Ireland as having openly LGBT politicians, heads of state. Speaking of Ireland, last news story. Leo Varadkar, who became the first openly gay Irish Prime Minister, or their equivalent of Prime Minister, has kind of taken the British government to task, because Theresa May, the head of the Conservative parties, is trying to form a partnership with the DUP, which is an ultra-conservative party in Northern Ireland. They have about 4 elected seats for the UK government. And the Conservative need 2 or 3 seats to be able to rule, and they're courting this ultra-conservative branch. But this particular branch have been using peace term agreements. So, of course, for our listeners in Canada, in Northern Ireland and Ireland, as part of the peace treaty, the ruling party, there was the party's got the ability to effectively veto legislation that they thought was outrageously contentious. And it's kind of this historic hangover or Klingon from the peace process when the IRA disarmed and became a little bit more civilized. But the DUP have effectively stalled and thwarted gay marriage in Ireland, in Northern Ireland, ever since, which is why the rest of Britain you can get married, but not in Northern Ireland. They've been thwarting. And now the Conservatives want to get into bed with them. So the openly gay Prime Minister of Ireland called them out, having said effectively, he's been saying for years that that they're ridiculous. But yeah, good. Openly gay heads of state. Good direction, good news.
It is a good news. I mean, we don't see a lot of openly head of state being any sort of LGBTQ member at all in the couple of last few decades until... You know, recently we have a lot of good great representation. But at the same time, Northern Ireland, I wouldn't say they are known for being homophobic, but they do have a very harsh environment for LGBTQ members. So to say that DUP is blocking gay marriage, it is a fact, but are they blocking it as being representation of their population? Like, are Northern Islanders actually that homophobic? Or is it just this party being ultra-conservative and holding on to its values?
Yeah, no, they're out of step with the population in Northern Ireland.
Government.
Yeah, this is just another representation of the government and the people being out of step. Now, we're going to go to a song by Miss White, who openly came out as trans and has begun transitioning. Interesting parallel, maybe for our trans listeners, this might kind of make sense, where Miss White wrote all of her songs before transitioning, and now has like this album that doesn't really work with who she is. For our other listeners, imagine writing songs about being single and then being married with kids and that major life change, and where your reality doesn't really match that anymore. So that's kind of the sort of scenario. Great interview with Miss White. She is, of course, from the States in Out magazine. Check it out. But this is her first song called Full Grown. And we'll be back just after this.
It's no place to be. It's one big fallacy. Dinah had a ride. Cause I'm mad about the boy. Cause he's haunting all my dreams. And he's taking all my joy. To go, it's just on TV shows. You might think I'm bright, but I'm not even full grown. I don't wanna say it's love if I don't know, I don't know. So just let it go. I don't care what you're making, maybe that's the part where you're mistaken. I don't care about your rent or your charity, barely fancy friends. It seems so overrated. Do you really want to recreate it? No, I don't know. So just let it go. I don't want to say it's love if I don't know. clever second verse. Now is not the time to beg, it's time to rehearse. How come you never show why you love me so? Look me in the eye, because I don't believe you. I don't wanna say it's love, I don't know, so just let it go. I don't care what you're making, maybe that's the part where you're mistaken. I don't care about your rent or your charity, fairly fancy friend. It seems so overrated. Do you really wanna recreate it? No, that love, that love, that love. But I don't need to know unless just hit it over with instead. I don't wanna say it's love if I don't know.
Hello and welcome back, and we are going to do, we're going to play the interview from Katie Sage, and after that we'll be hearing Tegan and Sarah with their song, The Con. And the reason being, Tegan and Sarah is touring for Con X, the 10-year anniversary of their release of the album Con.
Oh my
So it's an acoustic tour across, I think they're in Edmonton, Calgary, Vancouver. Not sure about the East Coast or Central dates yet, but if you're in the West Coast, check it out. Tegan and Sarah's The Con playing just after our interview with Kitty Sage.
I'm still a bit shocked that Tegan and Sarah has been around for 10 years. I feel old.
Hi, I'm here with Kitty Sage from CFUV in Victoria on Vancouver Island. Now, you're the host of In Rainbows. Do you want to tell me just a little bit about that and kind of maybe what like inspired the show?
Okay. Well, In Rainbows was began in November of 2015, and I'll start with what inspired it. So there's a podcast coming out of Brooklyn, New York, called Homo Ground.
Oh, nice! And that's a cool pin.
Thank you. And I found that podcast in 2013, and it was at a time when I was like really struggling in many ways, financially, emotionally, mentally, and that podcast gave me such a important outlet for my life, and came out once a week or once every 2 weeks, depending on the timing, because they were all volunteers. And then I was like, oh, I would love to do something like that myself. And so I got involved with CFUV, and I basically just set out to put together a podcast featuring musicians, and I wanted to really highlight music from isolated communities, because I feel like that's really important. I grew up in a mid-sized city in Ontario, Peterborough, and I just find that, especially in Canada, there's so much isolation amongst...
It's a very big and sparse in many areas country. Yeah.
So, yes. It's like, even if you're in a big city, there's so many little, smaller places around. So I just thought, if I can start with the precedent of featuring LGBTQIA2-spirit folks and asexual, and then and put it through the lens of trying to also find people and folks from isolated communities, then hopefully I can you know, help people find out about what they're doing, and hopefully they go out and support them, whether they go to their mm-hmm. shows, they buy their swag, they purchase their music, they just find an outlet and find a connection with their community.
I was actually really impressed by the idea of kind of sort of underrepresented musicians insofar as not from urban centers. I think that,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's significantly a challenge, I think, to be able to not only find the space to be a musician in small towns, small cities, or even, you know, small communities that have quite the town designation, but to be on top of that additionally openly queer is, that must be quite a substantial challenge. Have you found folks who are open but also in like redneck communities and,
yeah.
and tiny places?
Yeah, I feel like it's really the power of putting it out there and then being like, this is the lens in which I want to curate the program and podcast. And really, it's just like, as soon as you kind of set that as your goal, it's like that great Field of Dreams quote, if you build it, they will come kind of thing. Yeah, and it's, for me, it's like, I think that if you set that as like your precedence and your priority, and then you can, it's kind of like, yeah, it's just like a good lens to start.
Yeah.
And then kind of like building in the folks that are in the urban centers and
to kind of complement the mix, I suppose.
Yeah. And of course, prioritizing folks that are in Canada, Turtle Island, Canada. Mm-hmm. And but also I'm interested in the kind of centering it in like the world community as well. Like there's so much incredible queer music out there, and it's like, let's start in small isolated communities and then like go, and then going a bit bigger, like the Onion approach, like, and then like Canada, and then like then in like larger urban centers in Canada, and then you know, throughout the North America, and then throughout the world, and so kind of like going from there. And I want to talk, okay, I won't answer my own questions.
No, go ahead.
I was just thinking, so a part of what I'm trying to, which I didn't answer earlier, which is a part of what I try to do with the program is, I try to do album feature, artist features, and then also album features. So, it's usually ends up being about five or six bands or musicians on each program. And then it's either I feature, kind of like a usually like three or four songs across their discography, or if they have just released a new album, mm-hmm. then it's like, here's a few of the songs from the new album, and giving a push for their new body of work.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, so, yeah.
I like the framing you've done there in the idea of, you know, it's curating a show and you're highlighting, you know, their new body of work. I think it's centering it within the kind of art sort of dialogue, which I think is pretty neat.
Yeah.
You know, is that something that, because of your art background, or something that you see in like the queer music world? Or
definitely, yeah. I think that my background is in curation. I come out of artist-run culture. I was a curator for an artist-run center in Victoria called the Ministry of Casual Living for 3 years. And that, a part of that for me wasn't just visual artist when I was curating. So the lens always for me was just like creativity, because in so many cases there was folks who had never had an art show, and maybe they were a someone who was a scientist, and then they also through studying in the ocean also ended up taking these incredible pictures, and then they're like, oh no, that's just science. And I'm like, actually, that those are beautiful, like, you're an artist, or, you know. And I think that also applies to sound and music. So yeah, I wear many hats, but I tend to, they have some kind of like intersectional integration when I think about all of the disciplines that exist.
It got me thinking, you know, in terms of the space for a show that's curating these LGBT folks, you know, is that a space and a program that you can see mainly on campus community radio? Or, like, is it because campus community is generally more sort of... we're syndicated on CC Radio. Or is that something that you think would do better as a podcast, or could it go mainstream? Like, what space do you see that landing in?
I think that it fits, and it so aligns with what Campus and Community Radio tries to do and what its, like, vision is to present. And I guess for me, with making it as a podcast, I think that when I broadcast live at CFUV in Victoria, I reach a certain audience, whether they're, you know, at home doing their dishes or driving to work, or it's at 10 a.m. So, you know, there's drinking their coffee, or... you know, just the myriad of things. But I think with podcasts, you have this ability to reach maybe the youth. You have this ability to reach people, again, in isolated communities who only have access to the internet, and they don't have that, they aren't reached by our antenna. I see like the youth being a really important aspect to the type of audience. I'm also, because I think that it's really hard being young, especially when you identify within the LGBTQIA2 spirit community, because it's like, you know, you're trying to like figure out everything out. And yeah, it's just nice to have some representation and a mirror and a connection.
It what I kind of like is seeing the folks who are able to kind of put this programming together, and I always wonder, you know, what is it about campus radio in your case that made you feel comfortable in that space to create this program? Essentially, I'm kind of thinking, you know, because there's folks listening and they're like, oh, you know, that show sounds cool, maybe I could do something like that, but, you know, would I be, welcome? Was it a space that I could feel free in? You know, me doing Pride is very different from me, you know, in other environments. And, you know, it's, so I know what I would do in some environments and what I won't do in others. So what is it about the environment of the campus station that kind of allowed for that ease?
Well, I can speak to my experience at CFUV, which was the staff. It really just came down to the people, and there's the staff, so friendly, so welcoming. It just felt like a place where I could freely express myself and not have to justify my identity or my expression, and people would just be like, do your thing, yeah. So, and also just listening, because I was first a listener, and just listening to the station and hearing some of the diverse voices, whether it was, you know, the people doing their program live, or whether it was listening to a syndicated program mm-hmm. like Wings.
Absolutely. Actually, we met Frida yesterday, and she had the first syndicated gay show in the U.S., which I think is fantastic. You didn't have a chance to catch an interview with her, though. It's very, very disappointing. But I think that's great. I think you're right. I think the trick is to listen. If you want to be involved, you know, listen and get an ear for it. And I think maybe the commercial stations don't realize that the content they're putting out has an impact on people who might want to be involved.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
You know, and that's a bit of a shame. But yeah, I think CC Radio is certainly an idea. I like the idea of podcasts. I think actually, I think me and you may differ there. I think that with podcasting, you're reaching an audience that knows roughly what they're getting into.
Mm.
Like, for example, we're broadcast on CFMH FM in St. John, New Brunswick, and the station manager there was telling me that he gets phone calls at 10 a.m. on a Saturday, which is when our show airs, being mm-hmm. like, why are they talking about butt plugs on your station? I don't know when that came up in conversation, but it's the idea
that's amazing.
I know, I'm like, oh, I totally forget that we go out at like 10 a.m. on a Saturday in like St. John. So it's sometimes I forget these things and I have to kind of catch myself. But, you know, so for that listener, they weren't expecting a conversation about what bukkake actually means at 10 a.m. over their breakfast. You know, for somebody downloading the podcast, they can see the description, mm-hmm. they can see the words and the logo, and, you know, we call mm-hmm. ourselves Canada's Queer Media. So I feel like for podcasting, you know what you're getting into. Mm-hmm. So there's the audience there, they're engaging for a reason because they're interested, you know, mm-hmm. as opposed to just happen to be hearing it in the car.
Mm-hmm.
You know, do you find that maybe your online audience is more kind of in tune with the show and more interactive, maybe?
I think so. I think that I do have people interacting with me live. We have like texting mm-hmm. into the studio, text to landline, and people text like, oh, what's the name of this song? Or like, oh, when did this album come out? Or just being like, oh, I love this. This is great. And not just, I think, on like a purely visceral level, like, oh, this is just good music, and it's not just like, oh, it's good because it fits the theme of LGBTQ. It's just like legit good.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think that the online audience that are podcasting are like looking for it because it's like the keywords there, like queer, LGBTQ. But I think that the listeners who are listening live are also, I hope they seem to enjoy it. I haven't received any negative feedback thus far.
Which is great.
Yeah. And P.S. Can Queer is on CFUV 11 to noon on Mondays.
Wow.
So I'm so excited to have
people are
conversations
having early lunch.
About butt plugs right before lunch. I celebrate that.
And actually, I'm glad you kind of jump on that because I did a presentation last year and it was the idea. And to kind of build on it, I find if you look at the word queer, what it means it's the other. It's an othering experience. And I find that that's exactly what the show does. You're not going to find somebody talking. That was it. The UK government was discussing whether or not to change the anal sex laws in the UK. And it could have an impact on regulations. There's a similar law here in Canada that's unenforceable, and there's many across the world that kind of fall out of Britain's code. So it was an important conversation to have. So we're talking about anal sex at whatever time, in this case it would be 11 till noon,
mm-hmm.
Within the context of this important news story. But it's the idea that having that conversation in a space and in a time where it's not normal is in itself a queer act.
Yes!
And I'm like, and that is what I love about the show, is that the fact that it exists, the conversations that it's having, queers the space of radio. And you can only really get that in campus and community radio because the space is already looking at other voices and underrepresented voices. Now, you're the program director.
Yeah.
So you must, like, really enjoy finding those voices that, kind of aren't up in the foreground.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely. We also have, your CanQueer is at 11 to noon on Monday, and then I'm on Tuesday from 10 to 11. And then I just recently put in Madeline's program, She's on a Wire, which she has a lot of queer content and in on Shoes on a Wire, and Madeline's working out of CITR.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's at 11 to noon as well on Thursday. So, and then we have Wings on Friday. And so
you just need something on Wednesday and then you've got the full pre-lunch package.
I agree. Yes.
Well, there's some amazing award-winning programming that we saw submitted to the Out Loud Award, which we introduced this year at the NCRA, National Campus Community Radio Awards. So we don't know who the winner is yet. But maybe when the show goes to air, yeah, maybe my show isn't submitted because of course I manage them, but so there's an open field for other programs,
mm-hmm.
but,
mm-hmm.
yeah, we'll see. Anyways, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me.
Thank you so much.
And learn
much,
a bit
Luke.
More about you and your show and kind of how it adds to the landscape of queering the airwaves.
Yeah. Tune in. It's called In Rainbows and, it's a funny,
I like your radio voice on your show.
Oh, thank you.
I do, it's very soothing.
I listened in, yes, I'm guilty of this, you should know this. I broke down and wrote you back before you had a chance to forget, forgotten. I am moving past this, giving notice. I have to go, yes, I know the feeling, know you're leaving.
Yeah.
Hello and welcome back to Canqueer, home of Canada's Queer Media. That was Tegan and Sarah's The Con. Now, I want to talk about a little bit of Canadian news, because that's what our kind of bread and butter is. So, there's talk out there that Prime Minister Trudeau is going to officially apologize to the people who got ousted in the military and public service for being gay. Of course, people remember like the McCarthy witch hunts of the 50s, where if you were homosexual, you could have been arrested and you were moved. In the UK, you were politely moved to other roles. So you may have been a senior civil servant, but the next thing you know, you're rearranging papers in the education department. Like, it's, you just get sidetracked and demoted. Well, in the UK, in Canada, they invented the freak machine. And we may have a show coming up in a couple of weeks talking about the fruit machine. But the legacy of that, of people being hunted down in the civil service and in the armed services for being gay and then ousted and thrown out of a job, it ruined many, many careers. It ruined a lot of lives. Well,
okay, I'm just going to do a... Can you give me a clip note of what the fruit machine is? I'm not Canadian, so I'm
It effectively was a machine that they used as a lie detector test to catch fruits, i.e. gay men.
That makes so much more sense, okay.
It was called the fruit machine. And the Canadians were so good at catching homos that they actually trained the Americans on how to do it better. So, yeah, bit of a dark spot in Canadian history there of the witch hunts for the fruit machine. Well, in 1969, homosexuality became decriminalized. So a lot of the lawyers working on behalf of these men who were kicked out of the military and civil service have said, before 69, technically broke the law. So there's not an awful lot you can do about that, because the government can fire you for breaking the law. But after 69, between 69 and 92... when the restrictions were lifted, anyone removed from 69 to 92, there's a case there, because they were removed in breach of the fact that it's decriminalized and it was an abuse of power, essentially.
It's more like discrimination from the look, from the sound.
Absolutely.
And because if you think about it, for a government to remove someone or demote someone because of their sexual orientation, I mean, say what you will. Maybe it's technical problems, maybe it's sexual concerns. But at the same time, you can't just remove someone because of the sexual orientation or because of the risk of something you see, you know, down the road. Mm-hmm. So, you know, even back then, when you know we don't have that much technology or understanding of LGBTQ or even LGBTQ rights wasn't even prominent, it's still very dicey to say that, oh, because you're gay or because you're trans or because you're lesbian, we should move you to another department or we should demote you because it raised some concern with other members.
Yeah.
So, I mean, no matter how you twist it, it's still discrimination.
Absolutely. And there's certainly a case there. Well, it looks like he's going to say sorry for it, likely with a bit of a payment package. I know that in the UK and Australia and a couple of other countries, they've officially apologized and have kind of paid out. But the Canadian government doesn't know who actually was dismissed. So if you are a listener and you were unfairly dismissed, contact Randy at Voice and No MP, who is the LGBT advocate within the
advisor,
Liberal government. Yeah, he's the special advisor on LGBT communities. Or contact your local MP to kind of make sure that your voice is heard and voice remembered, and reach out to us as well. Now it's Pride season. Although here in Ottawa, the nation's capital, we have to wait all the way until August before we can get some Pride vibes. This weekend, when we're recording, or next weekend after our recording, is Toronto Pride. But Toronto is not the center of the universe, despite what Toronto likes to think. So we did a little bit of a look, and Winnipeg, now pinknews.co.uk, says that Winnipeg saw the first trans Pride march in Canada. I know that's not true, because Toronto's had it many times. Even Ottawa's had a trans pride march. It had like 20 people in it. But what's really interesting about this is that 400 people showed up for a trans pride march in Winnipeg. Winnipeg, of course, had a great parade a little while ago. I was talking to some radio station folks from CKUW and CJNU, both of them in Winnipeg, and they were saying how great the Pride March was there. So 400 people for the Trans March. The organizers were expecting maybe like 80. Mm. So it was a huge win for the people of Winnipeg.
It's definitely a huge win, but like I don't get why is it, like what's the difference between the Winnipeg's parade this year, besides the volume of people that showed up that gave it kind of legitimacy? Is it because the other ones lack legitimacy because the lack of chance rights? Was it because of the lack of volume of people, or maybe it just the organizer never actually gave it credibility? Like why is it considered? Like the first Chance Pride or a Chance Parade, because Pink News is actually a very prominent outlet for a news outlet for LGBTQ community. So if they are saying this is the first Chance Pride, either they are, you know, they're not giving themselves a good name, or they must be some kind of legit.
They may be misinformed.
Yeah. But by who?
Well, the other thing is the history of trans marches is that maybe they hadn't been considered a parade, maybe they were a march. Asia, they're quite small, so maybe they may not have been in the official record. There's lots of reasons. But we know from Toronto and Ottawa, they certainly have existed before 2017.
Oh, for sure.
So, but there is a bit of sad news now. On the 5th of June, Saskatoon saw its Pride crosswalk vandalized. And then on the 12th of June, Whitehorse saw its crosswalk vandalized, Pride crosswalk vandalized. And then in Lethbridge, Alberta, and for our listeners out of CKXU in Lethbridge, I can't believe that for not only once, but twice in 1 week was the crosswalk in Lethbridge vandalized. I can't put words on
black
it.
Paint?
So essentially, somebody tore through and put massive skid marks right through it, completely ruining the nice paint job. And then the second time, the initial report said that somebody had put tar and feces on it and dung. And everyone's like, wow, that's crazy excessive. Turns out it was actually black paint. And the dung was when cleanup crews had put like peat moss to absorb the paint. But so they got confused. But essentially, somebody had gone and ruined the beautiful Pride walk sidewalk with black paint, thinking that they're making a point. Well, guess what, folks? Point missed a little bit. Because as a result, four or five businesses in Lethbridge have essentially said, you know what, we weren't huge vocal supporters before, but you know what, sign us up. We'll give cash and donations because this isn't the kind of town that we live in.
You know, the problem with vandalizing, just based on these news stories, of sidewalk is that even if you are trying to do it to express your opinion or free speech, as some American would say, it's not exactly it, is it? Because what you're doing, it's hiding behind whatever mask you have and dumping black paint on a sidewalk.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't, like, if you take out the LGBTQ sidewalk, what they're doing is vandalizing a crosswalk in their own community. Like, in what sense does that make sense? If you are, like, anti-LGBTQ, you know, you. I'm not saying you're allowed to be homophobic, but is that the best way that you express your, anti-LGBTQ, spirit, I suppose? That is just coward. Like, that is a coward move.
It is really cowardly, and I know that we go out in Lethbridge, and, you know, for the folks in Lethbridge who may be hearing this, you know, I am so pleased that the city announced it was going to repaint it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm so pleased that people listening in Lethbridge and the businesses and the people in the community disagree. This is cowardly. It's a disgrace. It's not the Lethbridge that people want to live in. If you want to disagree with it, have conversations, have a dialogue, have a conversation.
And know, have a logical point, because this doesn't make any sense. Black paint, like, what message does that send? Yeah. And at the same time, like, you're defacing your own community and you're defacing that city. These people are coming out not just to support LGBTQ community, but they're supporting to fight against whoever is vandalizing and attacking the community, like, out of hate. And that is, even if you hate the LGBT community, I don't know why I'm having tongue tie, but even if you do hate them, if you hate someone, you don't go out and throw black paint at their door. Yeah. You come out and you tell them why you hate them. And then
you have a constructive conversation about it. Maybe meet halfway in the middle. But black paint's not the right way to go.
Also, black paint, like, really? Like, can you choose to get something a little more creative?
Well, the problem is that every other color was in the it's in the sidewalk.
You know what? They should paint that entire intersection rainbow, so that they would need more black paint.
I mean, also that stuff's expensive. Like, that's, you know,
fair.
You know, it's clearly somebody had to went to a paint shop, got the paint. It's a lot of hassle for a point that makes you look like an idiot.
Also, you say skid marks. Doesn't that mean that their car must have drove by?
Yeah.
So they just ruined perfectly good tires.
I know, they're wearing down their tires. Clearly, these vandals in Lethbridge don't think things through. But you know what they should think through? Better actions and being better people. Now, I want to wish the people of Lethbridge a happy Pride. And gosh, it sounds like you're going to have a great party to celebrate the defiance against these idiots that think black paint's a good idea.
Oh, please do. Have a great party. My thoughts and prayers... Well, I don't know why I said that. My thoughts and wishes go out to you all. And it's quite appalling. Like, we have our... was it the murals on Bank Street?
Yeah.
Our mural on our village, like in our village, was defaced, and I wouldn't say our community was outraged, but it was a big thing, and everyone, even not in the LGBT community, was really upset because it wasn't just the mural that represented the trans community; it was a mural that represented our city and our spirit, and you know, the whole community that was working there. And like the business partner there was, I remember going to one of the business partner meeting, and they were generally more upset about their community being defaced than the actual act of defiance against the LGBT.
Well, I think in Ottawa's case, that's certainly all fed into it together. But you know what, Lethbridge and other communities, Saskatoon and Whitehorse, stand strong, give them the finger and say, you know what, we're here, we is here, and we is queer, and we are not going anywhere. And I think that's a strong, powerful message that needs to be heard. And it's a message that I'm so happy to say happened in Kyiv, in the Ukraine. We've talked about Kyiv in the Ukraine a lot this season, with Eurovision being there recently.
I don't know if you could tell, but Luke is a big fan of Eurovision
and Kyiv. But over in 2016, they had their first Pride parade. 1,000 people showed up. This year, they had 2,500 people showed up in a fantastic Pride parade. And if you see the photos, check out the photos. It's a column of Pride parade supporters, and then a matching column of army guardsmen and police in riot gear on either side. And some protesters battled with the police a little bit, but overall it was fantastic. And I think we're seeing some good news and some good defiance coming out. All just in time for Shania Twain to release a new song. And I'm so
That's
happy.
That's a terrible segue.
I'm
by
so
the way.
Happy that Shania Twain's song kind of fits so well with Pride and defiance and reinventing yourself and becoming more brilliant. Her song Life's About to Get Good, I think can certainly be an anthem for your Pride season, along with, you know, I Will Survive by Gloria Gaynor and the Pet Shop Boys and Elton John, but maybe put a bit of Canadian talent in there. We're playing with Shania's brand new song Life's About to Get Good off her upcoming album, first track in almost 15 years. So, yeah, well, I mean, she lost her husband and her brother, so it was...
It is.
Certainly is a bit of a block. But There are some not so great news that happened in the last 2 or 3 weeks, but we're not going to delve into it. We want to tell Canadians listening, wherever you are, Vancouver, Vancouver Island, Victoria, the eastern provinces, St. John, Lethbridge, have a great Pride, and we'll talk to you next week. Is that bye from me?
Bye.
Just broken, I was shattered. I trusted you so much, you're all that matters. You know all the love me, and I sang like a sad bird. I couldn't move on, and I think you were flattered. Oh, life's about joy. About pain, it's all about forgiving and the will to walk away.